You're listening to Cairo News Radio Middays.
Welcome to Cairo News Radio Middays. Jack Stein, Spike O'Neill, Mr. Bogus Emergency Phone Call. Isn't that right, Spike?
Hey, anything's an emergency if you're upset about it.
Right.
Come on, it's all about definition. Come on.
So, joining us in the studio, by the way, getting right to business, is the most dangerous man in Olympia, a man shoving people into lockers, saying, you got to give me the truth. I need the truth. I'm here from Cairo Radio. Matt Markovich,
AKA. You can't handle the truth.
You
right?
can't handle the truth.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Mark Matovich. So, Matt, what's going on with this drug possession law? I hear tell, my thing about this always is, when we talk about drugs, I want to be a libertarian about it, and I just want to say, well, everybody should just have equal access to do what they want to do as consenting adults. If they want to do heroin in the privacy of their home, I think that should be fine. But what we're talking about is not necessarily upstanding citizens, to put it lightly. We're talking about ne'er-do-wells who are largely living on the street, correct, with these drug possession laws?
Well, you know, here's the deal with this. We're talking about anybody who has can possess a controlled substance. That's what this is all about. So, yes, we're talking about the people on the streets, people on the buses, and there's actually some changes to this law. And that's what we're going to talk about here.
Okay.
And that's – it's a big – and I tell you what, you can go to Vegas right now, and I will put a – I would call the odds 50-50 whether this passes.
Wow.
And
wow.
Here's the big deal about this is that – and this is why I tell people – come July 1st, if the legislature doesn't enact some sort of drug possession law, the current law, which was manufactured 2 years ago, at the 11th hour, they quickly put something together following a Supreme Court ruling to have something in place. If they don't have, and that sunsets on June 30th. So if they don't put something in play here, come July 1st, we go back to no drug possession law at all.
Nice.
In the state of Washington.
Oh. Wild, wild west. Here we go, boys.
Exactly.
Smoke 'em if you got 'em.
It's just such a bad idea. This is just the worst idea possible, right? So can you break it down for us?
Yeah, Matt? I sure will. So what happened is that the Senate basically came up with a well-crafted bipartisan, when I say well-crafted, that means everybody involved says, we like this bill as a possible replacement, which basically made as a penalty, if you're caught with a controlled substance, it's up to a year in jail. It's a gross misdemeanor. But you don't have to go to jail with all these different avenues of accepting treatment. And there's plenty of them. Before trial, after the trial, during trial, if you accept treatment, so you can avoid any kind of record on drug possession.
And I love that it's so many opportunities to accept. Is it diversions? Are they called?
Yes, a diversion, pretrial, diversion.
I mean, you're not serious. You got nothing. Well, it seems they have quite a bit. Okay, I'll take it now.
Or even if you're in the middle of trial and decide, you know what, Judge, I'm going to go to treatment.
This is looking bad for me. I'd like to go to treatment.
Yeah.
Jail sounds like a bad option.
That's right. And so they can do that. So there's a lot of off ramps there. So, but the main thing in terms of the penalties was this gross misdemeanor, because right now the makeshift law that's in place right now, it's a misdemeanor. Basically, the most you can get is a 90-day fine. And then the current law basically says if you're caught with illegal drugs on the street there, Jack, or in the bus, what they can do is arrest you. Oh, but by the way, we have to take you to treatment first. Oh, and if they catch you again on the bus with illegal drugs, a second time, oh, we can't arrest you yet. We have to take you to treatment. This is what cops have to do. And on the third time, they can actually arrest that person. And the police have testified during the legislative session, this is really not working. We're not getting referrals. I mean, I think the chief of police in Everett testified out of the 200-some-odd contacts they had, only two people got taken to a treatment center. So it's just not working at all. So what happened is that the Senate passed this bill with making it a year in jail. It goes to the House. And so just the other day, at the 11th hour, the last possible time that you could pass a bill, a policy bill like this in the House, they rewrote it. The chairman, Roger Goodman, rewrote the bill. And basically his feeling about any kind of penalty is this. Oh, sorry. My fault, operator error. Here we go. You. Try it again.
We don't want excessive punishment. 90 days of jail is too much for many of us already.
So he's basically saying 90 jails. I'm holding my nose, but I'm going to rewrite the bill so it's a misdemeanor, and it's going to be 90 days in jail. And they basically, they took out what I would call the ratchet up the system. So if you get caught and arrested, and then you go to treatment, but you bail out of treatment, and you get caught again, the penalties kind of go up, and the chances of bypassing court or even jail time get thinner and thinner. They took that out of the bill.
Jeez.
So,
wow.
So what they did add to the bill was the ability that if you get caught with a controlled substance, either you're using it on the street or like on a bus, they can now arrest you for a misdemeanor. You would think that that would be the law anyway right now. So they put it in this law that's now that if you just have it on the street or you're using on the street in a public area, just in a public area, not in your private home, but in a public area, that's a misdemeanor. You can be arrested. And then you go down this path of maybe treatment, maybe not.
So now I've got egg on my face because about a month ago, Spike, we were talking about this bill and we were talking about the deferral program and the provision in there for ratcheting up sentencing. And I remember we had this conversation and somebody texted in and they said, it'll never go through. And I said, well, it's in the bill. And now look at me. Look at me.
I tell my kids, don't blame yourself for the shortcomings of others.
This is true. I was right.
It was a good idea when you said it. It's a good idea today. Hold on. I'm moving all my money to soft on crime yard signs. I'm investing in that for the next election cycle.
Well, let me play you the kind of the sentiment about what the idea behind a lot of the Democrats feel about this bill is that it's not a criminal issue. It is a health issue. Now, this is Tara Simmons. She's a representative from Bremerton, Democrat, who talks about her past history as a convicted felon. I mean, I'm going to just play a little bit about her family. Here's a little bit about our family.
My father, my mother, my brother, my sister, my aunt, my uncle, my cousins, every single person in my family, outside of my children, have suffered with substance use disorder and been incarcerated. And I think it's bullshit that we have to sit here and stigmatize people like me again and not understand that there are multiple pathways to recovery.
So she's calling. She said this whole thing is BS.
I don't know.
I'm with you, Jack. Alcoholism is a disease. I'll give you that.
Sure.
But drunk driving is a crime. Drinking in public is a crime. It can be both a health issue, and when it affects those around you, then it becomes a legal issue as well.
And
it's not 50-50. It's not either way.
When we use the word stigmatize, like, oh, we don't want to stigmatize that behavior, I'm sorry. I saw a video earlier today from Jonathan Cho downtown where a guy is heating up his meth pipe with a propane blowtorch in the middle of the street. Mm-hmm. I think that we could certainly stigmatize that kind of behavior, right? Like if you don't want to stigmatize somebody walking into a hospital and saying, I'm in desperate need of help, I'm a junkie. I understand that. Let's not stigmatize that. But we should probably stigmatize the guy who's, you know, shooting up between his toes in front of a Kroger, right? I think that Absolutely. We can all agree that would be the
that's
guy.
I want a crime here. I know he's sick. I know he needs and deserves help. I still want this to
Well,
be
let
a crime.
Me just tell you the reality of what's happening on the ground should that happen. The guy's using a butane tank to, you know, light up his whatever.
Yeah.
A cop walks up to him. If this law passed, here's what would happen in reality. He would say, sir, I'm going to arrest you for a misdemeanor. Here you go. We're going to take you to jail, book you. But because of the crime, we're going to let you go immediately. That's the reality on the ground right now. They're not putting guys like that in jail. So the guy's back out on the street 2 hours later. He's got a kind of a thing for go to court for treatment. And then not treatment yet. You know, then he'll be right back on the corner there 3 hours later, lighting up again. Seriously, that's exactly what in reality, that's what will happen right now.
Right.
And I just want to play a little bit about what the Republicans were saying about why they would like to see a higher penalty, a potential year in jail, and restore what the Senate had. Now, this is a Republican, Jenny Graham from Spokane. Here's what she
said. We're talking about having compassion for the people that have substance abuse. We need to have compassion for our families, our businesses, and our communities that are no longer safe being able to deal with dangerous people that refuse to get help.
So she's talking on behalf of the people who have to deal with people on the street. You know, the businesses around there, the general public who would go down to downtown area, that we should take that in consideration now. I think the biggest thing that what could happen in the future with this bill is this. It's not going to go to the House floor. It's going to be debated. The Democrats, remember, control everything. The Democrats are undecided on how to do this. It didn't even go to a vote of the floor of the House last time when the House had its own bill similar to this. So we're going to sit there and wait. And most likely the Republican leadership has already said this may come down. It's always been 11th hour in this. This may come down to the last day of the session, April 23rd. And now if it comes across over to the Senate as a misdemeanor, here's the head of all the Republicans in the Senate on whether or not it's going to pass or not.
I don't think it passes the Senate as a misdemeanor. I just don't think there are votes to do that.
So there you go. That's why I say if you go to the Vegas right now, it could be 50-50 if we pass something here. They have to pass something or there's no law come July 1st. That's why this is a big deal. And I wanted to help. I appreciate you guys letting me explain why it's such a big deal at the legislature. These are your lawmakers that you vote in an office. You want them to get some work done. And I'm not taking sides here, but they've got to do something here.
Yeah, and I appreciate you bringing that to us. I think that what's going on is that you have a certain percentage of the Democrat Party in Washington who legitimately thinks that this is a health crisis, and they go, well, we need to divert these people into rehab. But I think the reality of it is how many of these people actually want to go to rehab. I know people to this day who are still drug addicts. They don't want to get sober. They have no interest in getting sober. They have none whatsoever. And so I think that's the other part of this that I might say to my Democratic friends is that we have to recognize that there are people who are lifers. They just want to keep doing drugs. That's what they want to do. And there is nothing that I could say to these people or that you could say to these people or that a judge or anybody else could say to this individual, because it ultimately has to be an independent choice. I think that in order to maybe create a separation between those people and everybody else, you have to have harder laws in place for people who just aren't interested in getting sober, right?
Well, when I talked about the watering down of the bill,
correct.
Here's a new phrase about treatment. So you're going to be sent to treatment, right?
Yeah.
There's even a question about how do you know whether you satisfy treatment? Because the judge will say, okay, I'm going to vacate your record if you've gone to treatment. Well, the bill now says you have to have substantial engagement in treatment.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a slip sign 30 days in a row. I know how this works. I mean, it's not a lot of gray area here, folks. I mean,
There's a gray area now on what it means to go to treatment, satisfy your treatment so that you don't get thrown into jail.
Well, I have to hear, fill this. Take it in the men's room, fill this up. I mean, verification of compliance is not that hard to do. Jack, hold on. I got to Google something real quick. Siri. How do I change my political affiliation?
So I knew guys. I was dating a girl for a period of time who would go to AANA meetings, and in those meetings, you see guys that are court ordered to show up, and they don't want to be there. They don't really because they got a DUI or something like that.
Right.
And so these guys would show up, and they would have their card, and they would just sit there, and they wouldn't. They would just like a statue, wouldn't take anything in. You know, just kind of hanging
out.
Don't
share. Don't care.
Don't share, don't care. 5 minutes before the meeting is over, they walk up to the front to the officiant and they say, can you sign this for me? I got to go. So I just think we have to deal. There are far too many people out there, I think, have these kind of rose-colored glasses when they're looking at drug addiction and they go, well, everybody is going to get help and people want to get sober. Well, it's just not the case. Some people just are on a suicide mission. I know this from personal experience. Some people just want to live that way. And it behooves us to recognize that, and it behooves us to have laws in place to prevent those people from harming others. If they want to go off and they want to kill themselves slowly over a period of 20 years, fine, you can do that, but you can't affect everybody else. And
not next to the melon rack out front of Kroger, you can't. I'm done. I'm done.
I
get it. If they don't want treatment, I get it. But the option isn't the sidewalk. The option is jail time then.
Yeah.
Because there are consequences for unlawful behavior. And you know, I've got 30 years plus, you know, in the rearview mirror of my addiction. Sure. So I don't mean to be this, you know, be so uncompassionate about this, discompassionate about this. But like to that lawmaker's point, how about compassion for the families and the businesses and the folks who spend a lot of money in taxes and care about their communities and want a nice place to raise their kids? I guarantee you, today's opening day at the M's game, right? I guarantee you, M's sidewalks are clear outside the stadium.
They went around. You bet they are.
When something matters, you find the resources, step up, and do the job.
They just cleared out a huge camp under I-5 at King Street, which is where people park to go to the Mariners game.
This is a civic asset. And everything is. A grocery store is a civic asset. Ask the folks in parts of the country where you don't have a real grocer and people are buying, you know, from bodegas or junk food. They're living on junk food. These are assets that we need to be safe and usable for the people who pay for the community we live in. And I don't mean to be, you know, a heartless POS about this.
Well, I think it's just frustrating, especially when you work in the news, I think, because you see the stories, you see them every day of the innocent who gets kind of sucked up into somebody else's nightmare. And you say to yourself, okay, well, this legislative session, we have some good ideas on the table, and then they get stripped away and they get cut down and they get watered down. And you just say, okay, well, maybe.
So
and
I'm we're going back to no crime at all. Okay.
Okay. I don't think this is the best idea. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see how that unfolds. Matt Markovich, any final words before we.
Well, I mean, I'll come right back to that July 1st. This is one of those issues that they cannot kick the can down the road. The road ends on July 1st. And they have, if they want to go back to literally no drug possession law at all, you can stand there on the corner, whatever you want to do, have a bag of fentanyl. No one's going to do anything about it unless you give it or sell it. But you can't kick the can down the road on this one.
No. Yep, the can's going off a cliff and there's a bit daycare down there. Yeah. Do not kick the can.
All right. Well, we'll take a really quick break. Matt, thank you so much for stopping by, my friend. I appreciate it. As the most dangerous man in Olympia, taking names, punching cards, other things.
I love that image of you in Olympia, man, just getting answers.
Bouncing out of a locker.
Yep.
We'll take a really quick break. And when we get back, Seattle is going to pay $6.5 million for not having a green arrow. Find out why when we get back right after this. Welcome back. So Seattle's going to be paying a motorcyclist's family about $6.5 million in the aftermath of a crash at an intersection in the Wedgwood neighborhood. So a driver, 87-year-old guy, turns left on a solid green light, and he strikes a 22-year-old young man named Jackson Rivas. And the pretrial evidence showed the Seattle Department of Transportation planned to convert the signal on 35th Avenue Northeast into a green left turn arrow. So instead of having the, you know what I'm talking about, Spike? It's a solid as opposed to the now it's your turn to go.
Yep.
And in those circumstances, when it's a solid, I believe you're supposed to yield, right? And you're supposed to yield for oncoming traffic. And this 87-year-old did not do that. And what makes this case interesting, though, is that the information that says that the city knew that they were going to do that because they were having problems at the intersection, but didn't do it until after the accident occurred, right? So some people are saying that this might be a frivolous lawsuit. I was reading kind of different comments about people talking about this. Some people are saying that this is a tragedy, and that in my read of this, if it's my job to create safe infrastructure for the people, and I do an analysis of an intersection, and I say to myself, we got to have a green arrow here. Let's get to it. And then in the 90 days, right, something bad happens. I'm just going to go on a limb here and say that the city is responsible for that, right? Like, the city is responsible for the well-being of the people who live within it. I understand that there are some people who are saying, well, the taxpayer is really on the hook for this. I get it. I get it all. I do think the family deserves compensation in this case, being that it just seems like it's so egregious on the part of the city. And keep in mind, the city says that they wrote in 2022 court filings that Rivas was contributory negligent, contributorily negligent.
Yeah,
that the family's damages were proximately caused by the conduct, acts, or omissions of other persons or entities whom the city had no control. So basically what they're saying, it's the 87-year-old driver's fault, not our own fault. They were dealing with this in pretrial. What's the phrase for this? Basically settlement, right? This, yeah. They're going to settle out before it actually goes to court. But I guess, Spike, what this brings to my mind really is this is the same topic that we talk about on a regular basis, which is most people are terrible drivers, right? Most people are just bad drivers. And unfortunately, when you're driving something that's 3,500 pounds, there's a chance that you could take somebody's life. Right.
And I don't want to be an ageist in this, but the driver of the truck that killed Rivas was 87. What was he? 87 years old.
Yeah.
And you know, and I know some 87-year-olds that are sharp as a tack that, right. that drive on a daily basis. Unfortunately, none of mine know we're in public government service, but sorry, that was a cheap place to make a bad joke.
Sure.
I've been riding a motorcycle for 20 some years, and I got to tell you, you know, the left turn with oncoming traffic is one of the most dangerous things you do. And you always, as you ride a bike, you assume no one sees you. You assume the absolute worst. You assume that guy's waiting to make a left turn. Assume he is going to make a turn in front of you. Now, the city, you know, they had no real reason that they had to pay this. Obviously, they settled, so they must have felt some liability here if they went to trial.
I think I could convince a jury that this was the city's responsibility. I think that I could do it real easy.
Well, right? I think you're right. I think the city probably felt the same way. That's why they settled. But it's not like they had been planning to make this change and it was delayed or they dropped the ball somewhere. I mean, they assessed this intersection. This particular intersection had 18 injury accidents within 2010 to 2018. So they knew that this was a high volume, high danger intersection. That's why they had made plans to make this a turn arrow light. And they just didn't get it done. And the family still has litigation pending against the driver and his insurance company. So this 6.5 with the city is independent and won't alter that. They're still pursuing that remedy as well. But they felt they had to take the city to court to force their hand into this intersection and potentially other intersections as well.
You know, Spike, you bring up an interesting point, though, which is when my grandfather, towards the end of his life, that man should have not been driving. Now, he was a Corvette guy. He owned a couple of them, and he liked to go fast. He liked to listen to the Beach Boys, round, round, get around, I get around, and he would drive really fast. Now, he died at 81 or 82 years old, and to be honest with you, he probably shouldn't have been driving past about 76, but that's just him. I think we should do really is we should do what you do. You know, basically, I think you should have to retake your license or your driving course after a certain age every 2 or 3 years.
They do make folks take an eye exam when they get their license renewals, but there is no driving portion of that test. And I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to make sure the grandpop still got it together.
Right.
You're driving a weapon out there. If when used wrong, as is in this case, you're driving a weapon.
Yeah, and I can tell you that Grandpa Jay, you know, he dinged up a couple of Kias out there. You know, he took the bumpers off of a couple of Corvettes. You know,
it's about spatial reasoning then. It's about reaction time then.
Right, yeah.
You know, he sees this bike coming down the road. He says, I got plenty of time, except my foot doesn't get to the gas pedal as fast as it used to. I mean, I don't mean to make fun. It's a tragic fatal accident, but that's exactly what's going on in the scenario.
But I think part of the thing that is humorous about it, though, is because it is true, though. Do you know what I mean? That there is truth in this idea. And some people can drive up to 90, 100 years old. They got no problems whatsoever. I have the feeling, though, that there are some people who just aren't as like, for instance, I wouldn't trust Joe Biden behind the wheel of a car. I have seen the footage of Joe Biden driving that electric Ford. You remember that piece of footage?
I've seen him on a bicycle and it scared the crap out of me.
Exactly my point. When he was in that electric Ford and he put his foot on the gas.
Those things are torque crazy.
Right. So, and that scared me. I thought we were going to lose the president of the United States in the first 30 days.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. Sorry. No, it's funny because it's true. I mean, you nailed it.
Right.
So, and I get all parties involved in this and why the decision was made to pay this out. It's the city saying, yes, we take this seriously. What more insulting thing could the city do than fight a family who's lost a 23-year-old son?
Exactly my point. Right. And I think the other thing that I find frustrating about this and why I think the family deserves money for their pain and suffering is that there was a long and storied history at this intersection.
Oh, yeah.
18 incidences. 18. Over the course of what, 9 years?
Yeah,
that's to me, it's like, okay, so you guys know there's a problem. It would be like if I walked into Cairo Radio and there was an abutment, right? There was a little raise in the floor. There's like 2 inches coming off the ground. And people kept tripping over it.
Right.
Just a random little lift in the ground. Maybe a board pops up. And people keep tripping over it. And then Chris Martin ends up with a broken nose. You know, John Curley ends up with a broken pinky. Brian Buckaloo breaks a couple of pairs of Oakley sunglasses.
You know, nobody cares until Dave Ross gets hurt. I'm just saying.
Nobody cares until Dave Ross ends up in the hospital. Do you see? And so this is what, again, if everybody sued at that point in time and we had years of documentation proving that the company had done nothing about this abutment, we'd win the case. I guarantee it.
That's how you make people, you get people's attentions through their wallet.
Right. Yeah,
whether
exactly.
It's a city or a citizen, that's what it is.
I got to get Diamond Dave Ross on the phone. I got a lawsuit I got to talk to him about. Someone find me uneven flooring in Cairo Radio Studios. I got to talk to Dave Ross. When we get back, dumb phones are on the rise, and it's not for reasons that you think. What's a dumb phone, by the way? Find out when we get back right after this. Welcome back to Cairo News Radio Middays. So, Spike, I have a pretty severe cell phone addiction, as you and I have talked about often. My screen time is up there. It's way up there. And I got to figure out some way to break it up a little bit. But the problem is it's also my job to be aware of when things happen, when they happen, who's talking about it, how they're talking about it. And so when I see this trend about dumb phones coming back around, I think I don't want to go back. Do you remember dumb phones? Do you remember the Nokia 3350? You remember that bad boy?
I'm looking at the story, and I'm seeing how many of these I've shipped overseas to military veterans and that put your phone in a bag program.
Yeah.
I can tell you how many times I've probably got a drawer full of these things.
I can't stand them. My first phone was one of these. Chris Martin, did you ever have one of these?
Yeah, I was a real slow convert to the smartphone. People were laughing at me in the newsroom, actually. Like, how are you getting anything done?
Yeah. So this is the problem. Okay. A smartphone is literally a gift from God. I have all of the information of the world at my fingertips. I can look up vintage guitars while at the same time researching the Battle of Hastings, and I can look up Spike O'Neill's sordid history. Do you know what I mean?
And you need a good screen for that. Some of the videos are beyond belief.
I can watch clips from Goodfellas and compare them to clips from Casino at the same time on my phone. I can do miraculous things. I can look up what medications interact with what other medications. I can do all kinds of stuff. I can order soaps and things for yoga. It's a miracle. It is literally a miracle. And now you have this like puff piece from CNBC saying, well, maybe we should go back to dumb phones. And no. Do I want to go back to a horse and buggy? No. I want to be in a car with AC and with heating. I want to enjoy power windows. Yeah. I want to enjoy my life. Well, let's go back to using telephones in the wall that you crank a thing on, and then you pick up the phone. You say, operator, get me the police immediately. There's a man in my house. I don't want to live that life.
Margaret, give me the police department, Margaret. Hold on, right. Mr. Stein. Let me correct you.
Let me tell you why this is a good story. This is a hopeful story.
Okay.
Because you, my friend, you use your phone for your job. You use your phone to become and maintain connection with everything going on around so you can deliver for this audience from 12 to 3 on a daily basis.
Correct.
A lot of folks don't use their phone for productive or good purposes. A lot of people dive down the rabbit hole of TikTok videos or Reddits or Instagrams, and they spend so much time on their phone, not in productive avenues at all, but in life wasting avenues. And there's a revelation among Gen Zers that they are just throwing so much of their daily life down the rabbit hole because of the thing in their hands. And if they pick up a Nokia brick and look at it for 2 seconds, oh, that's right, I don't need to do anything there. Let me talk to my friends here on the street. Let me go to lunch with somebody and actually talk to the people I'm having lunch with.
Mm,
I mean, because there are far too many of us, myself included, from time to time. I get to use the excuse that I'm often working on my phone, but I'm not working. I'm playing and doing stupid stuff. And for folks, for Gen Z to come to the realization that, hey, you know what? There's a life outside this screen. Maybe if the screen wasn't in my hand, but I could still, you know, call people I need to call them. Maybe check a stock report if I had to check a stock report and not just be constantly looking at the latest dance step or epicfails.com on my phone. They might be better off. I think it's a hopeful thing.
This is bad. Well, this is bad. This is Spike. Let me ask you a question. Light bulbs have been proven to disrupt people's circadian rhythms. Right, it disrupts the rate at which melatonin is released from the brain into the body to tell us to go to sleep. Should we reinvest in candles? Should we all go back to using candles?
No.
Right.
But say you keep turning the light on to do stupid stuff, and you don't sleep at night, okay? say you're like, that's a great analogy. You get up in the middle of the night and you're building model airplanes or whatever you're doing, and you're not getting any sleep. Wouldn't it be a smart idea to maybe turn your power off from like midnight to 6 a.m. or something? Force yourself to get some sleep?
Well, I literally, the last thing I see on God's green earth before I shut my eyes is my phone. And the first thing that I look at, other than my nicotine lozenges when I wake up, is my phone.
We gotta get you a woman.
Yeah, I know, exactly. So I've got other things in my life, like my cell phone and my PS5 that, you know, fulfill my needs.
You're a good man, Jack Stein.
But so this is the thing, is that Gen Z, this is a fad and it'll go away. This will go away really, really fast because when you have literally all the entertainment I could ever need in my hand, right? So look at this. Chris Sullivan just texted me. Brian's Oakley's. He laughed at my joke. How could I know that Chris Sullivan was listening to the radio if I had a dumb phone? See?
Yeah. Again, you're productive. Here's my concern with this story. It is the wrong solution to the problem.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, you know, if folks are too entrenched and in just in love with their phones for too much of their day, and it's ruining their productivity and it's ruining their mental health and it's creating horrible synapse patterns in their brain, the solution is to be self-controlled and have more willpower to put your damn phone down, not give you a brick that you can't abuse your brain with. I mean, it's the wrong solution, but at least it's a solution.
I will say this, though. If they bring back the Nokia, if they bring back the brick, there's going to be a lot of ladies out there that are going to feel a lot safer when they're walking around at night. Because if you get attacked and you have a literal indestructible brick in your hand, no one's going to mess with you.
And when it impacts somebody's head, it automatically dials 911 for you.
Just saying, man. Yeah. Those old Nokias... I mean, it was like having a soup can with you at all times, and you could just bean somebody with it. Go away. Coming up when we get back, Spike and I are going to do a little media analysis. Different stations look like their ratings are going down. Other ones are going up. Also looks like maybe Gayle King and Charles Barkley are teaming up to make a show. We're going to do some media analysis.
That?
All over the place when we get back right after this.